Welcome, everyone, to the Workforce Navigator podcast. I'm Steve McDonald, your host. Today, we have a really interesting conversation and guest. We're going to be talking about today's transformational CHRO. Not only the things you need to be thinking about and doing, how you actually achieve a seat at the table. You are an executive. Part of the responsibility is the sustainable growth and revenue growth of the company. So there's a lot of weight on all of our shoulders here as C-suite executives. And we're going to be talking today with Emma Woodthorpe. Now, Emma, you are the Chief People Officer at Brooks Automation. You actually have been, for the last 8.5 years, you've been a CHRO. But what's interesting is you used to be a super athlete. You used to be a rower. You'd be on crew. You also, everywhere you travel, you go there with your Kindle and over 1,000 books. You're probably one of the most well-read individuals we've had on the podcast. But before we get started, if you wouldn't mind just expanding on that a little bit and giving us some of the highlights of your background before we jump in.
Yeah, I'm happy to, Steve. I've been in the HR profession for more than 25 years. I'm not going to say exactly how many years because it feels like a scary number. I will say I started my HR career, and not many people know this, actually on a temp desk where I was placing truck drivers in contract roles. Interesting place to start your HR career. You learn a lot about the kind of excuses people can make to not go to contract roles, but it was a great start to that. And that was in the UK. So obviously my accent is not American. I am from the UK. I came to the US in 2000. I was fortunate enough to work in Silicon Valley during the dot-com boom and unfortunately to work there through the dot-com crash. So I saw Silicon Valley much at its heyday. After Silicon Valley, I was fortunate enough to go work for DuPont for 11 years in progressively larger HR roles where I learned how to do strategic HR at a $30 billion company. But what I realized about working for a $30 billion company is that wasn't my sweet spot. I actually made a conscious decision that I actually wanted to go smaller. And so I actually moved to a company as the VP of HR for two of their divisions that was about $5 billion. And after 3 years of being with them, I made a decision, first of all, that I wanted actually to move into a chief HR officer role. But I also realized I wanted to go smaller again. And the reason I wanted to go smaller was because the transformation and growth you can see in high-paced, fast-growing, smaller companies was really in my sweet spot of what I'd love to do. So I'd had this great foundation of HR from larger companies. And it was how you took that and then said, okay, how do you do that, but get creative how you do it? And how do you do it in a way on a company that's moving at very high pace and high growth? And so I've had these wonderful opportunities. When I became a CHRO, I was in the electronics industry. And I helped take a company from 200 million to a billion in 5 years with 15 acquisitions. So a lot of transformation when you're doing something like that, which then led me here to Brooks. Brooks is actually a privately owned company. So Mercury was a publicly owned company. Brooks was probably been taken private by a PE firm and is going through another rapid growth transformation. But in the private world, which is actually a little different to doing it in the public world. And it's something that we're on a journey on, but we are looking to grow. The semiconductor industry is going to grow, and that's the industry we play in. And we're going to grow rapidly over the next 3 to 5 years, which will include obviously changing the way we do things.
That is the perfect lineup and transition to, we can't, I mean, no matter what, every industry, it's constantly changing. The audience that we're trying to reach, the ICPR, ideal customer profile, they're complex, they're changing. So how do we do this? And so it's intriguing with that background. If you could start us out with your definition of what you think the transformational CHRO today.
Yeah, a transformational CHRO is really a CHRO that has to always be looking around corners. You can never stop looking and saying, okay, what's coming at the business? What's happening in the industry? How are we going to need to adapt as a company? How are we going to need to adapt as a profession in the programs, the support, helping create value for our businesses and our customers? You have to be constantly thinking about that. You can never stop, because when you stop, you'll get surprised. And so it's a constant evolution, a constant, okay, we're here, but we want to be here. So we're at 22,000 employees, let's say, and we're $1 billion. But we're going to be $1.5, $2 billion in the next 5 years, which means potentially we have 4,000 employees in 5 new countries. So how are we going to do that in a way that you can scale and grow? How are our leaders going to do that? So you're constantly having to ask questions about the future in a much more kind of constructive, intentional way, because otherwise you're just going to get surprised if you don't continue to do that. So really from a transformation, it's constantly asking the question of what's next.
That's an interesting part of this, because I wanted to ask you a question about, as a C-suite executive, you've got a seat at the table where these strategic decisions are being made. You're in front of the board and they're asking, hey, how's this quarter going? How's next quarter going? That five-year plan, are we on track? How do you earn that seat at the table? That's a powerful set of, you got a CEO, you got CROs, you got CMOs, you got chief experience officers, customer officers, CTOs. How do you have a seat at that table and a rightful place there in that strategic decision-making process?
So it's funny, I'll ask that question a lot. I don't get asked it as much as I used to HR, because things pivoted with COVID for the HR profession. But what I always say to that is, do you think I waited to be asked to go to the table? I didn't want to be invited. I put myself at the table and then I added value. And I added value by making sure I understood how the P&L and the financials of the company worked. I understood how the industries worked. I understood how the business made money, how the business made product, what the products were. And so that everything I was doing from a people standpoint of when thinking about, hey, we're going to grow and double in size, we better have leaders able to scale to lead businesses that are 2-3 times the size of what they are now. Otherwise, they will destroy value. And so by knowing the business and speaking that language, that's how you get the value of being at the table. But I hate it when people say they wait to be invited. I'm like, don't wait. Just go and figure out how you add value. Because if you just wait, somebody may never invite you. I never waited. I just went and sat at the table.
And you have to add value. In other words, you got to come in with a point of view. You have to have your own point of view. And I talked to a lot of C-suite executives, and every single one of them has one thing in common. And it's something that you said too. They know their customers. They spend time face-to-face talking to their customers. Now, is that something in your point of view that a CHRO should be doing as well?
Absolutely. And this is a new concept. And I remember the first time I went to see a customer, and it was more than 10 years ago. And the customer looked at me and said, why are you here? And so I said, here's why I'm here. Because when I understand what you do and I understand what you need from us, I can then build a culture and understand the type of people I need to be able to deliver what you need on the time you need it and the quality you want it. And the person went, huh, I'd never thought of it like that before. And almost every company I've worked for, I've gone to see customers. I've been on wastewater treatment plants to understand the pain of an operator of a wastewater treatment plant, because our pumps and analytics in Xylem ran that plant. And so I don't recommend it. Everybody understanding where your product gets used and how it gets used is really important. I've met customers here at Brooks, and they give me great feedback. They give me great insight. I get to understand what it is they need from us and what they're not getting, which then helps me understand from a strategic, from a behavior, from a culture, what is it we need to change to make sure we are delivering what our customer needs and what they're looking for us. And if you don't know that from your customer, you're missing a huge part of what you need to build a strategy. I don't get asked anymore why I'm at a customer. In fact, the customers love it, because now I'm talking about, what do you need from us? What do you need from my people? What's working? What's not? And they're like, wow, this is great. It's another way of us telling the perspective and figuring out, helping you figure out the people strategy. So it's absolutely imperative. And if you're not asking your salespeople to go see customers, start doing it. If they say why, have a good answer for why, is because it will help you to be a better leader inside the company to drive culture and people programs.
So there's a number of points I want to unpack there, but the last one you talked about with sales, there was a study that was done by Gong. They're the biggest in recording sales conversations, then AI tools on top of that. And salespeople talk 65 to 75% of the time. That's 2/3 to 3/4 of the time. They're talking, and they're mostly talking about who we are and what we can do for you. What you're doing in by going out to the customer, right, is it's not a sales conversation. There's no shield that's up. Nobody's getting sold. Even customer success talking, a big part of customer success is addressing questions, making sure they're happy, but cross-selling and upselling. There is nothing about your visits to the customer that has anything to do with sales. It's all about genuine learning.
Yeah, and it helps me. There are times when I've actually come back to my sales team and say, hey, have you thought about how to approach this particular leader? Because I tell you, having now spent time with them, I think this might be an approach you might want to use. By the way, we try and encourage our salespeople to only talk 30% of the time and actually listen to the customer 70% of the time. Because you can get the customer talking, the customer will give you more information if they can talk. You'll find out more about roadmaps if they are talking, not you. We are teaching and training our salespeople to do that. And so they get more out of the customer than best selling.
So here's something that if I could wrap this up with what I think you're doing there is there was a study that came out from McKinsey and it talked about the most profitable companies, the ones that are creating long-term sustainable growth. They have one thing in common, and that is their absolute focus on customer experience.
Yeah.
Now, when you go out to see a customer, how many of their other partners, vendors that they're working with are doing that? How many of them are coming out and saying, how can we be of greater assistance? What's working? What's not? How do I learn? That right there sets apart Brooks Automation or whoever is listening on this call right now. That is demonstrating that a CHRO is taking their time to come out and learn about your business and ask what's happening and what we can do better. That is absolutely huge.
Yeah, and I agree. When I talk to some of the customers, I talk to them, they'll say, no, there's not that many doing it. And they are surprised and happy when you do. I also do make a point, though, of reaching out to the CHROs of our customers as well where I can, because out of respect, I'm talking who are our customers in either engineering or senior leaders, but I do out of respect also reach out to the CHROs and connect with the CHROs as well, because it's another way of gaining insights, but also just sharing knowledge around what's going on in the industry and the things we're trying to support. So I do encourage that as well. If you're looking at the customers, also talk to the CHROs.
So another thing that is incredible about this, earning the seat at the table, having your own point of view, you just said gaining insights. Without insights, you can't have your own point of view. And just that story you told about how you would sit down with sales and you learn from going there and saying, here might be a way that you can approach this customer and expand this customer and grow our revenue. And by the way, 30 to 40% of all of our new annual revenues should be coming from existing customers, customer expansion. So these kinds, not only they're getting great insights, not only developing experience, but they are an important part of a customer expansion strategy too. So if anybody is listening right now and understanding, okay, how did you earn your seat at the table? I think you've just answered it in a big way.
You have to be bold. I think it's being bold enough and having the confidence. I remember the first time I went out in front of a customer, like, I don't know nothing. I don't know anything. But I asked questions and I sought to understand, and I was really interested in the product. And when you've got passion about the product, your passion comes across and people just love talking about what they do and what they build. They really do. Most people are very proud of it. And so when you ask to say, tell me how you use our product, what does it do for you? How does it work? People are super excited most of the time to tell you about it and what it does.
Well, we spend a lot of our lives at work. You ask somebody about themselves, it's like being at that cocktail party. And you talk to somebody and they talk the whole night and they had a great time. Go in that probably when you're out there, that talk 30% of the time or less and let them talk is even more accentuated. Now, if you could, help us prioritize. You've given us an introduction in a way that we've talked about transformational HR roles and CHRO responsibilities, that seat at the table, having a long-term vision, a point of view to set the company up for the next stage of success. How do you prioritize the HR initiatives in your own mind?
So when it comes down to it, especially if you're in a transformation environment, a growth environment, there's lots you could do. It's about what you should do, and it has to be tied to value creation. How do you create value for the business and for the customer? And so it really starts for us with two things. It's what are the needs of the enterprise? By the way, we're a company that doesn't use the word corporate and we don't use the word headquarters. We're a very non-political company. We use the word enterprise because it's not inclusive of everybody. But what is it that the enterprise needs to create value from its people strategy? And then what does the business need to create value from the people strategy? And then what in HR do we need to optimize to make sure we're effective, efficient, and providing the best employee and candidate experience? And then once you've got that list, it comes down to, okay, now you might have a list of 10, and then you have to get really disciplined and say, how many of these things can we actually do? And by the way, I would say I'm not always perfect at that. My team would say that. My first year here was like, we bit off more than we into last this year. We did better and we've been highly successful. Next year, we're going to get really ruthless about what we work on. And that's the other thing is ruthless prioritization is in writing it down and saying, this is what we can do. This is what we heard from the business, the enterprise. This is what we need in HR. This with the budget and the time, this is what we can do. And this is what we're not going to do. And writing them down has been a big learning for me because I didn't used to write down the what we're not going to do. I've learned write down the what we're not going to do, align it with your business leaders. And then in the middle of the year, when someone goes, you didn't do this, it's like, well, hang on a second. That was on the not going to do list. With CEOs, sometimes forget that. And from having it written down or even to, okay, has this become more important for value creation than something that is on the what we call OKR list? If it is, let's have a conversation about stopping something and starting something. The biggest fear I see in all companies is it's not stopping things, not saying no. That is the hardest skill I think executives have to learn is you do have to say no. And I'm still learning that at times, so I'm not perfect.
I want to go back to something you said early on, and it was like transformational CRO, CHRO is responsible for bringing on the right people and creating the right culture. Culture can be one of those things that kind of like mission statements and value statements and culture, we have it on the website and we check the box. And it's interesting is the more CHROs that I talk to, everybody agrees that culture is one of the number one priorities. It establishes like that candidate, that onboarding experience, people that want to work here, want to stay here. Churning employees is a horrible thing to get into. But what's really interesting is there's been actual studies Bain & Company did. I personally talked to two different combinations of CMOs and CROs that have said their company culture, they attribute to 50% or more of the success of the business. That's how important they think of it. So I would love to hear your thoughts on company culture and what that is. It's such a used word that we just let it gloss over. What is the importance of company culture in your mind and what is it?
There's a great saying that culture eats strategy for lunch. And I firmly believe that you can have the best strategy in the world, but if your culture doesn't align to driving it, you're going to fail. Look, for me, culture is really the habits of how you do things. Yeah. But I think there's also the way you treat people and that feeling. When you're in a very analytical company, it's like the habits. There's no, actually, there is a feeling you get when you come into a company that you know this is the right company. They feel, people feel welcome. They feel invited. They feel included. They don't feel people like, who the heck are you? There is a feeling of just coming in. And then on top of that, there are the habits that are how you decide you're doing from objective setting, transparency, you know, feedback, alignment, performance. What is your nomenclature from the way you talk to each other? How do you structure meetings? There's many different things that can come into the habits. But if you have a company, a culture that rejects people when they come in, or people don't feel, you're just treated as humans, then the rest doesn't matter because people are going to leave anyway. Because people stay at companies a lot of time for that feeling. There is an argument they stay for a paycheck. I get them. But most people won't stay for a paycheck if they're treated poorly. So having a culture at least of people feel included and welcomed, and then having the discipline of the structure and the habits you need for accountability and to drive performance. What I often see is people will have one without the other. And in fact, I think it was in McKinsey, I think they did a research paper a few years ago that showed companies with very good process were pretty successful. Companies who had nice people practices were pretty successful. So the two types of cultures, companies that had both in their culture were great. They were head and shoulders from a financial performance, from a customer performance. They were head and shoulders above the other two. So you need both. And I think the one thing you have to remember, so we're actually evolving our culture right now. And we spent a lot of time on what we shouldn't change. What should they? This is a company, I hear this all the time. Wow, I've been here 2 months and I feel like I've been here 5 years. Everybody's willing to help me. Everyone were there. And so we spent a lot of time doing that and then saying, okay, what are the things we need to change? And what are our priorities to making that change? Whether it be development, it be process change. We spent a lot of time kind of wrangling with this to make sure that we're evolving and not throwing out everything that actually is really good about our company. But again, as a transformational leader, you have to be thinking about that because what got us to $1 billion may not get us to $2 billion. And so you've got to be thinking about those changes.
Always thinking forward, always. I want to ask, culture is also a big part of a CHRO is getting the right candidates, getting the right team. But then the culture is about making sure that they're here to stay and they found a home. Another part of the post after they come on board, you mentioned that you started out working for in a temp position with truck drivers. I know you're in semiconductor manufacturing. You have a large temporary workforce. So you're thinking about workforce management and from a strategic point of view. How much is that part of the transformational CHRO's job? Is workforce management strategy around managing the workforce itself?
Yeah, so it has to be, and it depends on your industry. So if you're in an industry that's fairly stable and you're growing at a pretty normal pace, maybe you don't have to think about workforce management and strategy. But semiconductor is a cyclical industry. So the ramps up and then it can drop down and then it ramps up and then it can drop down. And we know right now the numbers out there on semiconductor is this will likely be a $1 trillion market in 2030. That's up by about $400 billion over the next 5 years. And we know this market's going to need another 1 million workers in it or another way to do the work. And so when you're sat there going, okay, this is what the industry is facing, I have to be thinking about, okay, how am I going to manage when I'm going to be competing with very large semiconductor companies, potentially for the same talent? Where are we going to go for our talent pool? How are we going to differentiate? Now, we have the fortunate that we make robots. And so I can take a robot to a career fair because they still do those at colleges. And I can just put a robot on a table with very little else and the line will be out the door to talk to us about, and I don't do this, my team does this, to talk to us. But I have to always be constantly thinking about what's going to happen from competing talent. Where are we going to go next? How do I balance, to your point, my Brooks workforce versus we call them contingent workforce, knowing that it could ramp up and then it could come back down again. And so how do I manage that so that I'm able to flex and flow with what's going on? So workforce management and strategies around workforce and talent, both talent retention and talent attraction. And I specifically call it talent attraction, not talent acquisition. It's very intentional, become very important because especially when you go into your market that could be going through a huge ramp.
And at the same time, if you're going from an industry of $400 billion to over $1 trillion, you're going to have to bring new people into the industry. You're going to have to train people. You're going to have to think about a workforce that isn't a, oh, you've done this kind of work before and how you do that. So training becomes a large part of the strategy of how we expand and how do we grow and how do we bring the right people and train them in. I want to ask for the transformational CHRO, What haven't we covered that you want to make sure that you're going to communicate to people here?
That's a really good question. Look, I think one of the things as a transformational CHRO is things move very fast in companies when they're transforming. You're growing at pace. You have to be able to bring the unintended consequences to the table. So when decisions are being made really fast, going, okay, when we do that, there is an unintended consequence of this. I just want to make sure we thought about that as we pivot and we do this. You have to be able to challenge the CEO and the executive team in their thinking. And I don't challenge on everything, but I do challenge on specific things. And when I'm seeing things, I go, hey, this isn't quite going as I think you thought it to do that. And especially with the CEO, I was a CHRO, a very good friend who is a CHRO. When I first became a CHRO, told me something that I have never forgotten. And he said, you have to be willing to lose your job every single day as a CHRO because you're the one person who has to hold up the mirror to the CEO and has to challenge the CEO. Everybody else should be, but it doesn't always happen. You have to be the person to do that. And in transformation, when CEOs are moving fast, you have to be able to challenge them and talk to them and give them feedback as you're going through that. Because again, as you grow from a billion up to 2 billion, the role of the CEO changes as well. And the role of an executive team can change. And so being that coach, being that mirror is really important. Fortunately, in 8.5 years, I have not lost my job, but it's really important that you play that role for the CEO. And I said, this is true for any CHRO, but it's definitely a transformation when you're moving at speed to be able to say, hey, have we really thought through what we're doing here?
All right. I have one last question, because we've covered a lot. And that is that if there was one thing that you wanted people to take away from this conversation today, what would that one thing be?
So the one thing actually is something we haven't talked about. When I became a CHRO and realized that I was on a growth journey, I knew I didn't have all the knowledge and all the expertise. My external network became incredibly important. And I didn't realize how important my network was going to be until that point, to be able to call up another CHRO or a CMO or someone else and just go, have you ever seen this? What did you do? How did this go? Because it's very hard to ask that question in a company, especially if the company is growing. And so actually the network around you externally to help you go through transformation is really important. And making sure, even if you're not a CHRO now, you're aspiring and you look at your network and go, you don't have a number of CHROs, you don't have CMOs, you don't have business leaders in there to start making those connections before you get to this role. Because I didn't have this success on my own. A lot of people supported me and helped me have this success. But it was because I spent time building a network that, and I didn't do it just to say, oh, I'm just going to network. These are people that I appreciate their advice and their input, and I do the same for them. So that's one thing we didn't touch on. And actually, that was one of the most important things for me as I became a transformation leader was having that network.
Here's my takeaway from everything you said is that you really got to do the work to be a transformational CHRO. It's very easy for us to think, no, another 5 years have gone by. I haven't really grown my network. I haven't been talking. I've been so focused, my head down. I haven't gotten out. I haven't talked to customers. I haven't challenged my C-suite executives. Or if you're at the VP level and you're ready to go, you need to be challenging others around you. That's a lot of work. Because you can't just have a random opinion. You have to have opinion that's based on something, understanding the business, understanding the customer, and understanding those other roles. That's my big takeaway is it takes a lot of work to do what you do.
The reward is great because one of the things in transformation and why I went down to the size of company I'm in is I see the change within 6 to 12 months. It's very hard to see that at very big companies. And so I can see the change, I can see the impact, and I can see what we are doing to support the company. And that's really satisfying. And it's really good. And it's good for my team. I make my team stop and look back and go, look at the mountain you climbed. You're just looking at the mountain left to climb. Look at the mountain you've already climbed because we've come so far. And there's something incredibly rewarding, but it is hard work. This is not for the faint of heart.
No, not at all. I know that people are going to have questions. And Emma, would it be appropriate if I gave out a link to your LinkedIn profile that people could reach you for questions?
Yes, that would be great. That's the best way to get me.
Fantastic. Thank you for coming on, and thank you for expanding kind of our mindset in terms of what the transformational CRO of today should be. Your insights are invaluable. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Steve, for having me.